Hello, this is Beatrice Pavia with the Pantograph, Part 1 of Friday, January 22, 2021. Let's go to page 1, where the big story is about Central Illinois sports, and it's called Baseball Connection. ISU grad stumbles upon pro baseball players in familial find. This is written by Cade Heather and datelined Bloomington. Hoke Beasley and Carl Dorley were probably shagging fly balls together one day under a 1931 Bloomington sun. When the former baseball outfielders were placed together on the Pantograph's June 8, 1931 front page for rejoining the Bloomington Cubs on the same day, Beasley and Dorley likely thought nothing of what could happen 55 years later in that same community. That was when Mike Frawley met his future wife, Donna Dorley, in a classroom at Illinois State University, the ballplayer's great-nephew and niece, respectively. Frawley, age 53 and now living near Indianapolis, avidly studies genealogy as a hobby and stumbled upon finding out that his great-uncle, Beasley, and his wife's great-uncle, Dorley, were Bloomington Cubs teammates for at least 1 year. Obviously, I didn't grow up knowing my family, Frawley said. My wife's family and my family never grew up knowing each other. They're from St. Louis, I'm from Chicago, and just the sheer odds of that happening is phenomenal. The Bloomington Cubs were part of the Illinois-Indiana-Iowa League, a professional independent baseball league, more generally known as the 3I League. The Bloomington Cubs were not affiliated with the Chicago Cubs or any Major League Baseball team. The 3I League lasted from 1901 to 1961, with a few years off for both World Wars and the Great Depression. Independent baseball leagues were more common then, as there were a record 59 leagues across 448 communities in 1949, according to Baseball Reference. Bloomington had four team names between 1901 and 1939. The team played at Fans Field, also known as Bloomington Grounds, near East Lafayette Street, South Main Street, and Barron's Place. Frawley always knew that his wife's great-uncle used to play professional baseball because his father-in-law had once told him, but he never looked into it any further. That was until he was talking to his mother last month about her uncle, who had grown up in Georgia, named Hoke Beasley. Frawley noticed that he could not find his great-uncle's 1930 census records, and once he located the records, one thing popped out to him. Beasley's listed occupation was baseball player. I said, that's interesting. I never knew he was a baseball player, Frawley said. His curiosity led him to punching in Hoke Beasley to baseballreference.com to find out if he had any statistics, and if so, for which teams. Frawley soon found out that he played for the Bloomington Cubs. So at that point, I just decided to look at the roster, and as I was scrolling down the roster, I see my wife's great-uncle's name, Carl Dorley, in the roster, Frawley said. He was shocked in the moment, but remembered knowing that his wife's great-uncle was a baseball player. He figured he would continue examining the roster. And as I was scrolling down, I also saw another person on that roster named Gus Gockle, Frawley said. Frawley played baseball at ISU and said that he had a teammate named Kevin Gockle from Staunton, Illinois. And when he clicked on Gus Gockle's biography, up came Staunton, Illinois, listed as his hometown. My jaw dropped, Frawley said. He texted Kevin Gockle to confirm that his grandfather's name was Gus, and Kevin responded with a yes and that he was a baseball player too. Here were three former Bloomington Cubs teammates for one season who ultimately took different paths but had their genetic trails cross once again 55 years later. I don't know, Frawley said, trying to piece together a meaning behind his finding. It's almost like kismet that my wife and I are together, We met in Bloomington, and here our great uncles played baseball in Bloomington well before we were born, so it's just almost like fate. And this story is accompanied by images of newspaper clippings showing these baseball players from the past, and also a modern day photo of Mike Frawley with his wife, Donna. The next front page story we're going to read is a national one about COVID. It is headlined, Biden signs virus orders, more shots, testing, and mask use, part of revamped strategy. This is an Associated Press story, Dateline Washington. With a burst of executive orders, President Joe Biden served notice Thursday that America's war on COVID-19 is under new command, promising an anxious nation progress to reduce infections and lift the siege that it has endured for nearly a year. At the same time, he tried to manage expectations in his second day in office, saying, despite the best intentions, we are going to face setbacks. He brushed off a reporter's questions on whether his goal of 100 million coronavirus shots in 100 days should be more ambitious, a point pressed by some public health experts. The 10 orders signed by Biden are aimed at jumpstarting his national COVID-19 strategy to increase vaccinations and testing, lay the groundwork for reopening schools and businesses, and immediately increase the use of masks, including a requirement that Americans mask up for travel. One directive calls for addressing health care inequities in minority communities hard hit by the virus. We didn't get into this mess overnight, and it will take months to turn this around, Biden said at the White House. U.S. deaths have now surged past 400,000, and he noted projections that they could reach 500,000 in a month. But then, looking directly into the TV camera, Biden declared, "To a nation waiting for action, let me be clear on this point. Help is on the way." The new president has vowed to take more aggressive measures to contain the virus than his predecessor, starting with stringent adherence to public health guidance. A key difference is that under Biden, the federal government is assuming full responsibility for the COVID response. And instead of delegating major tasks to states, he is offering to help them with technical backup and federal money. He faces steep obstacles with the virus actively spreading in most states, vaccine shortages, slow progress on distribution, and political uncertainty over whether congressional Republicans will help him pass a $1.9 trillion economic relief and COVID response package. Adding to the challenges are virus mutations, particularly one that has emerged in South Africa that may make vaccines somewhat less effective. Dr. Anthony Fauci, Biden's top advisor on the pandemic, told reporters at the White House briefing that we are paying very close attention to it. Biden's plan includes an expansion of research capabilities to map out the genetic structure of new variants. The United States will resume funding for the World Health Organization and join its consortium aimed at sharing coronavirus vaccines fairly around the globe, Fauci said, renewing support for an agency that the Trump administration had pulled back from. Fauci's quick commitment to the WHO, whose response to the pandemic has been criticized by many, but perhaps most vociferously by the Trump administration, marks a dramatic and vocal shift toward a more cooperative approach to fighting the pandemic. Biden officials have said they have been hampered by a lack of cooperation from the Trump administration during the transition. They say they don't have a complete understanding of their predecessor's actions on vaccine distribution, and they face a litany of complaints from states that say they are not getting enough vaccine, even as they are being asked to vaccinate more categories of people. Biden's mask order for travel applies to airports and planes, ships, intercity buses, trains, and public transportation. Travelers from abroad must furnish a negative COVID-19 test before departing for the U.S. and must quarantine upon arrival. Biden has already mandated masks on federal property. Biden is seeking to expand testing and vaccine availability with the goal of 100 million shots in his first 100 days in office. But some independent experts say his administration should strive for 2 or 3 times that number. Even with the slow pace of vaccinations, the U.S. is already closing in on 1 million shots a day. "It's a disappointingly low bar," said Dr. Lina Wen, a public health expert and emergency physician. Asked about that at the White House on Thursday, Biden told a reporter, "When I announced it, you all said it's not possible. Come on, give me a break, man." Biden has directed the Federal Emergency Management Agency to begin setting up vaccination centers, aiming to have 100 up and running in a month. He's ordering the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention to begin a program to make vaccines available through local pharmacies starting next month, building on a plan devised by the Trump administration. And he is launching an effort to train more people to administer shots. Biden has set a goal of having most K-8 schools reopen in his first 100 days, and he is ordering the Departments of Education and Health and Human Services to provide clear guidance for reopening them safely. States would also be able to tap FEMA's Disasters Relief Fund to help get schools back open. And our last front page story is a state one about COVID. It's headlined, "Report says State House spent $330,000 for 2 weeks of rent." This is an Associated Press story datelined Springfield. The Illinois House spent $180,000 to rent out Springfield's downtown convention center last week due to fears about conducting business at the Capitol during the coronavirus pandemic, according to documents disclosed to the Associated Press. Lawmakers in the House have now spent a total of about $330,000 in taxpayer money to rent the center for less than 2 weeks during the pandemic because officials decided the House chamber does not allow sufficient distance between legislators to avoid transmissions of the virus. The House jammed months of work into last week at the convention center and anticipates 56 more days of legislative action between February 2nd and May 31st. Considering that it will likely be months before most people receive a COVID-19 vaccine, continuing the arrangement with the Bank of Springfield Center would be costly. The illness, which has killed 18,520 Illinois residents since March, has virtually shut down the state's economy, adding billions of dollars of debt to a state already deeply in debt. After the pandemic spread picked up speed last March, both the House and Senate, with chambers on opposite ends of the 1872 Capitol, canceled weeks of scheduled meetings. And then, faced with a May 31st deadline to put together an annual spending plan, they feverishly produced one over 4 days in May. Like last week, the May session saw the House, with 118 elected officials and dozens of support employees, operated from the Bose Center. Facility rental is $5,000 a day, the standard rate, but with catered meals, security, audiovisual equipment, and other incidentals, the 4-day contract ran to $144,000, according to invoices disclosed under the Illinois Freedom of Information Act. Add to that the $180,000 rung up for this month's stretch, and it amounts to a daily rate of $30,000. What alternatives exist are unknown. New House Speaker Emmanuel Chris Welch, a Democrat from Hillside, and his spokesman did not respond to requests for comment. Although vaccines to prevent COVID-19 have begun to roll out, Illinois public health officials on Thursday reported 4,979 fresh cases of the illness for a total of nearly 1.1 million since its debut. The death toll increased by 123. The pandemic has affected the Senate too, but not to the same degree. It has continued to meet in the Capitol, 9 blocks west of the convention center, but business by the 59 senators and their staff members has been conducted with only a handful of lawmakers on the floor at once. Because the Senate is still using that building, there is no money saved by the House's absence. The Secretary of State's office did not immediately provide details about the typical daily expense for lights, heating or cooling, security, and maintenance. One COVID case was reported in the State House last week. Senate officials on Thursday canceled next week's session, with leadership saying that it was in the best interest to reconvene February 9th in Springfield. Adding to the convention center expense is that lawmakers and House staff ate catered boxed meals for lunch and dinner at a combined May and January cost of $92,000. While in session, lawmakers rarely have time to step out for a meal, and in the temporary setup, officials wanted to limit movement to tamp down possible virus transmission. Future House sessions at the center would likely cost even more. In January, taxpayers were on the hook for only $4,000 a day facility rental. But the center's general manager, Brian Oakes, explained that House Democrats, who control the chamber, wanted the Democratic Party of Illinois to be billed $1,000 a day separately for a room where they could have political discussions. It was during those discussions that the caucus chose Welch for speaker over Michael Madigan, the Chicago Democrat who had controlled the gavel for 36 of the past 38 years. But that was a wash because lawmakers rented another room for committee hearings that could not be conducted on the convention center floor. With audiovisual equipment, the extra room ran more than $9,000. In a legislative body where the bulk of its early spring work is conducted in committees, which in the last General Assembly numbered 37 in the House, it is unlikely that lawmakers could do their work on just the main convention floor and one additional meeting room. However, due to COVID-19, the center has no upcoming conflicts. Restrictions on social interaction in Sangamon County limit what the facility can host. Typical arena events are prohibited because current rules limit gatherings to 50 or fewer people. The General Assembly, whose members are considered essential workers, is exempt. And now we'll go to some local news. The Normal AMC Cinema is to reopen on January 29th. This is a Pantograph story, Dateline Normal. The AMC Classic Normal 14 is reopening January 29th, the company announced Thursday. Under the state's COVID plan, theaters can operate with capacity limits. The theater at 201 McKnight Street and other venues were closed as coronavirus cases increased. COVID closed most theaters and ceased movie production. AMC Entertainment Inc., the world's largest movie theater company, in December said $750 was needed to continue operating. And this story is headlined, Not Guilty Plea in Lincoln Murder Case, Dateline Bloomington. A $1 million bond was set Thursday for the Lincoln woman charged in the death of her husband. Kathleen Yates, age 67, is charged with 3 counts of first-degree murder. She pleaded not guilty to the charges when she appeared in front of a judge Thursday via video conferencing. She was arrested Tuesday after calling Lincoln police to report a shooting. Officers found her husband, 77-year-old John S. Yates, with a gunshot wound to the chest. Emergency responders attempted to stabilize him, but he died of his injuries. Lincoln Police Chief Paul Adams said the preliminary investigation indicates a domestic dispute occurred and resulted in the discharge of a firearm. Yates is in custody of the Logan County Sheriff's Office in lieu of posting $100,025. Her next hearing is set for January 27th. And in more local news, this story is headlined, Limited Vaccine Slows Rollout in McLean County. 66 cases added, 6,500 shots so far, Biden may speed process. This story is Dateline Bloomington. New data from the McLean County Health Department on Thursday reported that 66 additional cases of COVID-19 have been confirmed since Wednesday. That brings the cumulative case total to 13,310. Nearly 600 people are isolating at home, while 22 are reported as being in the hospital due to contracting coronavirus. As of Thursday, 77% of the county's total hospital beds were in use, and 65% of ICU beds were also reported filled. And while 22 McLean County residents were reported as hospitalized with COVID-19, health officials said in a news release that a total of 28 people are in the hospital with the virus. No new deaths were reported in the county's update, meaning that number stands at 136. McLean County, now under Phase 1B of the state's vaccination plan, reports 6,500 vaccines have been administered so far. As it has in recent days, the county statement noted that shipments of vaccine continue to be limited, although Governor J.B. Pritzker said in a statement Thursday that he hopes the transition to a new presidential administration will help the vaccine rollout, as well as continued efforts to reduce the spread of COVID-19. 1 year and 1 day since the first known COVID-19 case was identified in the United States, I am incredibly heartened to see the Biden-Harris administration step up to the Herculean task of providing a truly cohesive, prepared, robust national response to COVID-19 that saves lives, protects our healthcare workers, supports small businesses, gets children back into schools, and promises the economic recovery that Americans deserve, Pritzker said in a prepared statement. Pritzker also was one of seven governors who issued a joint statement Thursday afternoon that encourages all people to get vaccinated once they are eligible. Although it is a new year, COVID-19 is still present across our states, and we all have a personal responsibility to do our part to protect our families, frontline workers, and small businesses. Each of our states is working around the clock to distribute the safe and effective COVID vaccines as quickly as possible. But we ask everyone to be patient, he said. The quicker we act to distribute the vaccine, the quicker we can reduce the strain on our healthcare system and defeat this virus. But until everyone is able to get vaccinated across our states, we must double down on mask wearing, social distancing, and washing hands frequently. Governors and lieutenant governors from Indiana, Michigan, Ohio, Kentucky, Wisconsin, and Minnesota participated in the statement release. More than 200,000 COVID-19 tests have been completed to date, and McLean County's rolling 7-day test positivity rate is 7.5% as of Wednesday. As part of Region 2, the county remains under the state's Tier 1 coronavirus mitigations. For the entire region to move into Phase 4, which would allow indoor dining and bars to reopen for indoor service, the test positivity rate must be less than or equal to 6.5% for 3 consecutive days, have no sustained increase in COVID-19 patients hospitalized, and have staffed hospital and ICU beds available at a number greater than or equal to 20% for 3 consecutive days. Region 2's test positivity rate is currently 6.8%, the ICU hospital bed availability is 28%, and the hospitals have not seen a sustained increase in coronavirus patients within 7 of the last 10 days. Nearby Region 6, which includes Piatt, Champaign, Ford, Coles, and Shelby counties, among others, has already met the criteria to move to Phase 4, the Illinois Department of Public Health announced Thursday. In a news release, the IDPH noted that while officials are encouraged by 10 out of our 11 regions moving out of Tier 3 mitigations, the state can send regions back a tier should coronavirus metrics begin to trend in the wrong direction. We must continue to practice actions to protect ourselves from the virus, wear our masks, avoid large gatherings, and get the vaccine when it is our turn, IDPH Director Dr. Ngozi Ezike said in a release. This is particularly critical as new variants circulate, which early studies show spread much more rapidly. We are headed in the right direction once again, so let us stay the course. The Illinois Department of Public Health reported 4,979 confirmed and probable cases of COVID-19 on Thursday and 123 additional deaths. And this local story is headlined, Local NAACP Installs Officers. It's Dateline Bloomington. The Bloomington Normal Chapter of the NAACP on Thursday had a ceremony for the group's elected officers. Installed were Linda Foster as president, Carla Campbell-Jackson as first vice president, Willie Horton Halbert as second vice president, and Ben Ryburn as treasurer. The installation ceremony was led by McLean County Public Defender Carla Barnes. Your job may not always be easy, but it is important, and I thank each and every one of you, Barnes said. She was appointed as the first Black woman to serve as a judge in the 11th Judicial Circuit last year. The event was held virtually this year because of COVID. The branch advocates for racial equality with a focus on economic sustainability, public safety, criminal justice, voting rights, and education, and organizes various events, including the Freedom Fund banquet planned in September. Foster on Thursday also spoke about President Joe Biden's inauguration on Wednesday and the raid on the U.S. Capitol this month. We experienced something that was horrific. It was a sight we thought we would never see in our lifetime, she said. Foster said the organization is anticipating more unity under the Biden administration. We are so proud of what the United States of America's citizens have said, she said. And Foster said, there is much work to do. And this story is headlined, Illinois grants $31.5 million from marijuana tax revenue. Dateline Springfield. The state announced Thursday that it has awarded $31.5 million in grants to 81 community organizations around Illinois to help fund legal services for low-income residents, youth development, violence prevention, and economic development in areas hardest hit by the war on drugs. The Restore, Reinvest, and Renew, or R3 grants, are funded with a portion of the state's revenue from sales of adult-use marijuana, and they were a key element of the 2019 bill that legalized recreational marijuana in Illinois. The Cannabis Regulation and Tax Act went into effect on January 1, 2020, levying excise taxes of 10 to 25% on sales of various products. It also provides that 25% of tax revenue be used to fund grants in communities that have suffered from economic disinvestment, violence, and the severe and disproportionate damage caused by the war on drugs. Prairie State Legal Services, which provides services in northern and parts of central Illinois, was awarded 4 grants totaling just over $1 million to provide civil legal aid, while Land of Lincoln Legal Services, which operates in central and southern Illinois, was awarded 3 grants totaling just over $230,000. And this has been Beatrice Pavia with part one of the Panagraph of January 22nd, 2021. I look forward to reading part two with you soon.